Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Collision. We don't need to get. So, Joel, the reason for Collision this week, the main objective, I should say, was to promote tomorrow night's Forbidden Door pay-per-view, of course. But the story of the show that will last beyond Forbidden Door is the first non-Chicago response to CM Punk since last year's big meltdown at the media Q&A following All Out. Kevin Kelly saying we're not in Chicago anymore, as boos erupted when Punk came out for the main event, the last of the eight to be introduced. As the match progressed, some CM Punk fans made their presence known. When there were some cheers, they cut to the crowd, and all I saw were grown men giving Punk double middle fingers. But there were definitely cheers for Punk also mixed in, and there were also some CM Punk chants. But the boos seemed the most overwhelming. We were anticipating hearing from a couple people who were in the building tonight, a couple listeners who will be our on-site correspondents, and can't wait to get their take on things. I believe we'll probably hear from Javier Machado, too, and get his take on things. But, Joel, I want to get your take, because we haven't talked in a long time. Welcome back. What was your first thought when you heard all those boos erupt for Punk? Surprise, or were you anticipating that?
Yeah, it's great to be back here with you, Wade. It's been a long time, but, I mean, what a great show to have a lot of things to discuss, especially the CM Punk stuff, where this main event, I mean, was an absolute spectacle to watch. You know, and it wasn't for the in-ring action and the drama of the moves going back and forth, but it was the reaction to CM Punk. And you know, they're in Toronto right now, which, as we know, is one of the more vocal wrestling cities, along with Chicago, Philadelphia, New York. So it's going to be a very polarizing reaction, one way or the other. But, you know, we're still fresh off of CM Punk, you know, coming back into AEW. We saw him, you know, get the huge reaction in Chicago, as many thought he would. But it was very strong in the other direction here in Toronto. CM Punk has entered the Bret Hart 1997 territory, but in reverse, where he's getting totally booed in Canada, but he's a babyface in the one city of Chicago. But I'd assume he'd probably also be liked in other cities, maybe Champaign, Illinois, or any of the other places that go there. But, you know, I don't want to say too definitively, because, like I said, this is one of the hardcore wrestling crowds, and I want to see how this continues to change as they go into other cities like Hamilton, Ontario, which isn't selling the greatest right now, you know, and some of these other cities that AEW routinely goes to, you know, because I don't think it's going to be, you know, I could be eating my words down the road, but I don't think that it's going to be this negative of a reaction in every city that they go to. You know, they definitely, you know, CM Punk is able to adjust. It's not going to be like a total John Cena situation where they're really pushing it one way. I think that Punk, as we saw in this match too, he can play into some of those heel tendencies. Maybe that is a direction that they go to down the line at some point. But this is going to be one of the top stories that's going to hang over AEW for the foreseeable future. Because watching the show, I mean, he is still by far, I believe, the biggest star in the promotion right now. You know, whether he gets booed or not, whether he hasn't wrestled in almost a year, I think he's still the biggest star there. And I think that they're going to they may have to pivot into another direction if he needs to go heel. But clearly right now they wanted him to be the number one babyface and Jay White being the number one heel on this show. But, you know, depending on the follow-up in the upcoming weeks, that they may have to change course.
Yeah, it's interesting to look ahead and project what the crowd response outside of Chicago in the United States will be. And the timing, unfortunate for Punk, if his goal was to be cheered, and if that was important to him, to immediately go to Canada, the hometown of Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho, two of the people who have had, you know, spats with him, and they're aligned, you know, with the Bucks and Hangman Page. And so how much of Canada booing Punk is everybody but Chicago hates Punk, or how much is it we're siding with Kenny and his buddies, the Bucks?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to be a while before we know. But, you know, we'll get to – I think New Jersey's the first collision that Punk will be at in a few weeks that's not in Canada or Chicago. So circle that, if my memory of the calendar is correct, as kind of the key date to see what the reaction to Punk is there. Is it a problem, or is it a feature or a flaw, you know, however you want to phrase it, if Punk is booed everywhere outside of Chicago, if it turns out that, you know, the United States, in addition to Canada, are siding maybe in the U.S. less pro-Kenny and just generally anti-Punk, or in Canada, it's more pro-Kenny and pro-Jericho and less anti and thus anti-Punk. Is it a problem, or is this a variation of Brett, a variation of the let's go Cena sucks, and hey, he's getting a big reaction. He seemed like a good sport. You know, you don't want to sell it. You don't want to let him see a sweat. So he seemed like a good sport about it. I would say it's a problem in the sense that tonight he obviously was booked against heels and teamed with baby faces. And I think it's unfortunate for FTR, unfortunate for Ricky Starks, whose body language and facial expressions were kind of interesting. Like, oh, why are you booing my friend here? But, oh, well, we're in Canada, and I guess I kind of – like, you're reading, trying to figure out how are they feeling. To me, the problem with tweeners is who do you match them up against? And if they're a baby face who's getting booed, then it's not fair to baby faces they're teaming with, and it also sort of undercuts the heels, whose job is to get heel heat. That said, it's very difficult to get a crowd reaction of any kind like what Punk got tonight. Very few get it. And I'm sure there's wrestlers in the back and watching on TV who are like, hey, I'll take that. You know, I'll take that kind of passion.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's as it was the case with Cena, is it, hey, any reaction is a good reaction. This is a good consolation prize. It's certainly better than no reaction. How do you feel about that going forward?
Well, I mean, CM Punk is one of the most compelling characters that they have. I mean, one of the comments that I made on Twitter about this was, you know, people may be booing him, but look at how engaged everybody in the crowd is to watch him and respond to this. And yep. it's really a problem if AEW doesn't respond appropriately to what's happening. You know, because if you look at some of those past examples, like John Cena, you know, and the crowd wanted him to turn heel, and it never happened. You know, they just kept plowing away with him, you know, just running through heels, Super Cena, winning all the time. And then you look at somebody, more recent example, the Cody Rhodes in AEW, and how people wanted to see a change in his character, and he would tease it at times, but it just kind of seemed that he had a direction that he wanted to go in, which was being that top. He wanted to be like a top babyface, like we're seeing him in WWE. And, you know, he didn't make those adjustments that I believe, you know, Tony tried talking to him at times, you know, trying to say, hey, let's go in another direction. And it just didn't happen. Whereas in this match, what was encouraging to me is, yeah, even though FTR and Ricky Starks, they were, I wouldn't say like surprised, but they were, you know, obviously not happy with that reaction. And they were trying to start CM Punk chants. They were trying to, you know, get the crowd going in the other direction by any which way they could. And whereas we saw Punk was just relishing in the reaction that he was getting, you know, where he went, I believe it was on Austin Gunn, he just went for the pin. It was just the one elbow, goes for the pin, then goes for the pin again. And then the first time he tagged out, he goes to ringside and he starts doing push-ups out there, you know. And so he's playing into some of that reaction there, you know. But obviously there's a lot more at play than just what CM Punk wants to do. There's the whole business aspect. There's the WBD believing that he was going to be the big star to carry the show. And I think he still could be, you know, even if he were to change directions and go as a heel. I think that there's a lot of different ways they can play it, but it's really going to be up to CM Punk and AEW making the correct adjustments so that they're not just fighting the crowd all the way through. But like I said, I mean, right now I think that they need to stay more of the course until we see more reactions from other cities in the United States.
Okay, let's pause. We've a lot more on the show to talk about. We can talk more CM Punk and everything else, Forbidden Door hype and MJF's promo and all that as the show progresses here. We'll also be talking momentarily to Chris, who was at the show in Toronto, and he's standing by. First, let's just briefly pause and introduce ourselves, and then we'll move on to our on-site correspondent, who I'm eager to talk to. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, following the second ever episode of AEW Collision here on Saturday, June 24th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show. I'm the founder, editor, and publisher of Pro Wrestling Torch, a newsletter I started in 1987 when I was in high school, and also PWTorch.com, which we launched in the late 1990s, and also the host of various podcasts, some VIP exclusive, like Everything with Rich and Wade, The Fix with Todd Martin, The Wade Keller Hotlines, and tomorrow night, our post-pay-per-view roundtables. We've been doing post-pay-per-view roundtables since 2003, so we're at about 20 years now. They're almost all available in our archives. If you go VIP, you can listen to our instant roundtable reviews that last an hour to an hour and a half typically in our archives. So go VIP. Plenty of other perks that come with VIP membership. Too many to list here without running out the clock. But we summarize them at pwtorch.com/goVIP. You can check out details on our VIP lineup and how to sign up with PayPal, credit card, debit card, Patreon, or directly using your Apple account on your iPhone. All detailed. Again, at pwtorch.com/goVIP. That includes these shows with the third-party ads and in-house pre-recorded plugs edited out of the shows for a much more streamlined listening experience. So check out details. The other voice you hear, you haven't heard in a while, and that is Joel Donnell. He is a pwtorch.com subscriber emeritus who may come back with more regular features, but it is great to have you back. Joel, you did the first Dynamite with me, right? You co-hosted after the first show?
Oh, good question. I don't think it was the first Dynamite, but okay. I think the same thing here where we did the second show together. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, it was your first or second, but I was thinking first for some reason, but great to have you back. It's been so long since we talked, so I'm excited to get your take on things. And welcome to the show. How have you been?
Yeah, no, I've been good, Wade. I mean, I'm very thankful for you to bring me back here, you know, after last year in Chicago. You know, Zach Haydorn and I got into a little bit of a scuffle, let's just say, you know, outside the Now Arena. And I knew there was going to be a little bit of a divisive reaction, but I'm very thankful that, you know, I could be the guy that you could bring back in here to get you the next, the next deal with audio.
Nicely played. All right, so we got a lot more to talk about. Let's give out the phone number and the email. If you want to join our conversation, consider yourself invited. The way to call is on your phone. There's a phone icon. So while you mostly text and look at apps and stuff, but you can actually call. And if you do, the number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard so that we know you want to be brought onto the show. And you can also email us, if that's easier, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. So we are expecting to hear from people who are in the building, and we are going to go to the first of them. And that is Chris L., who was in attendance tonight. Chris, welcome. Thanks for calling and being on the show and sharing your in-person experience. I'm excited to talk to you about it.
Gentlemen, good evening. How are we doing?
Really good. So, yeah. First of all, how full did the arena get? I saw, Twitter and, the top sections were tarped off. But just kind of talk about the size of the crowd and then describe kind of the buzz and enthusiasm also.
Yeah, so it started off pretty sparse for the first sort of hour and a half of Ring of Honor, but it filled out really nicely. There were only a couple of empty patches. Hard cam was pretty much empty, but the rest of the building was pretty solid. I mean, they slashed prices on these tickets. Like, I know what we paid was about twice as much as what the same tickets were selling for today. So the arena filled out really nicely towards the end, and it was a solid crowd.
So let's just go ahead and get into the reaction to CM Punk. First, I remember a decade ago being at Minneapolis at Target Center. CM Punk was on the show, and I was waiting to get in the arena, in the concourse, or in the lobby, I should say. Packed lobby, waiting for the doors to open. We were all there early, and CM Punk chants broke out. I mean, it was all about CM Punk.
Yep.
Tonight felt like the same thing. So I'm curious, did Punk – did the allegiance of fans, either pro or the allegiance to Punk or against him, show itself before his ring entrance in any way? And then after addressing that, talk about the reaction for him coming out and during the match.
So, and it's, I've never seen anything like the reaction of him in the 37 years I've been watching wrestling. Not Cena, not Roman Reigns, nothing. Through at the start of the show, people were trying to start CM Punk chants. This is when the arena was filling in, and they'd get booed down instantly. And a friend of mine was watching at home, and he said on the TV, you would hear mostly boos. In the arena, it was pretty evenly split, and it was a loud split. It wasn't, you couldn't say, oh, it was the women and children on one side and the men on the other side. It was both on both sides. It was loud. It was raucous. It was over the top of each other. The atmosphere was incredible. Nobody in my section sat down for the entire main event.
So, yeah, it seems like I was thinking of how to phrase this if I ran a poll online, because it doesn't just seem like people like Punk if they like him, but they really hold a grudge against people who don't. And if you don't like Punk and somebody does, they just like want to punch you. Like it feels divisive and intense. And it sounds like you're saying, you know, people were trying to cheer Punk and they were getting shouted down. I still have just like embedded in my brain right now the vision of the male fans just standing up and giving a double middle finger to him that they zoomed in on the crowd for. Just talk a little bit more about that emotion. Did it get uncomfortable, or does it seem like it's intense, but it's playful? Like, describe that dynamic, because obviously that wasn't something we had to think about in Chicago. It was almost all pro Punk, and this is the first time he's outside of Chicago since everything happened 10 months ago.
It didn't feel uncomfortable at any point, but I also wouldn't call it playful. I think people are genuinely conflicted. We were having a chat with some of the people around at the start of the show, and the prevailing opinion is both parties are idiots. Both parties are acting like kids. Some people think that one was more in the wrong, but there didn't seem to be anybody who was heavily in one camp or another. And I think that's kind of what we were seeing. Like, we wanted CM Punk to know that we still liked him, but we also wanted him to know that we're still mad at him. Do you see what I mean? It's like, we like you, but we haven't forgiven you, almost.
Interesting. So as the match wore on, did the dynamic change? Like, was it like, we need to get it out of, kind of like you're saying, we need to get out of our system and let you know how we feel. But now that you're wrestling again and you're out there doing your stuff, did the dynamic and the crowd reactions change at all, or did the lines stay pretty divided?
It's I've never seen the like of it, because you had, you know, the Guns are solid heels, and Jay White and Juice are pretty solid heels, but everybody in the match was getting cheered at one point or another. And it's not like it changed or developed as we went on. It was pretty much, we just liked people more and more. And to hear the sort of the crescendo building, it was almost like what you want for any TV main event, the intensity building the entire way through.
Joel, jump in with a question about anything about Chris's experience at the show tonight. It can be more on Punk or something else.
Yeah, I want to ask about some of the other things other than CM Punk here. Talk about a little bit, more with Christian Cage. And so, you know, he came out there. He's kind of a big, you know, big Toronto guy. He is, you know, on social media, big Maple Leafs guy. But he goes out there, and he's able to get the crowd to really boo him and go against him. Can you just talk a little bit about that reaction to Christian Cage and how people were feeling about it before he started going after the Maple Leafs? Are they wanting to really cheer him and they appreciate him, or did they just see him as a heel the whole time?
The feeling I got was that everybody kind of knew he was going to come out there and turn himself heel. And so basically we were just waiting for him to turn on the city, because that's kind of his MO. He doesn't really have another way of turning himself heel but to attack Toronto. But, yeah, we gave him the cheer because he's a local guy, and it's good to see him. But as soon as he started in, we wanted to respect what he was doing, you know, and so he got the boos that he was looking for. It was just good heel work from Christian. It's not less than I'd expect from him, honestly.
Go ahead, Joel.
Yeah. And so so let's also talk about the Hiroshi Tanahashi match. I mean, Tanahashi, legend, great wrestler, but he's starting to break down a little bit. So just talk about, you know, the crowd reaction to that. You know, I mean, over on TV, you know, it was a fine match. You know, Tana knows how to work the crowd. But, you know, just the skills or the athleticism has clearly declined over time. But just talk about that and then the MJF promo afterwards.
So the match itself was weird because you don't normally see comedy Tanahashi. And we had quite a bit of that to start the match. And Swerve played into it well. Swerve is just, he's so underrated. He's doing amazing work right now.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I don't know how it looked on TV, but in person, it looked bad. Like, Tanahashi, he had lost a step before. He's lost several now. I mean, anyone can slip on the top rope, but I don't really want to hold that specific thing against him. But if you take it as a whole with everything else that happened tonight, it's a matter of time before he's relegated to the multi-man dad matches. Sorry about the noise. They're moving tables in the concourse here. I'm still in the arena. I'm worried about tomorrow. MJF can carry anyone, but I do kind of worry if that's the Tanahashi we're going to get, that match probably should go home in a few minutes.
Yeah, it the same thing that you said is how it came across on TV, that he's able to, you know, do some of the comedy, really engage the crowd. He's still extremely charismatic, but it just seems that we're getting to a point with him where, I just don't think there may be one more big Tokyo Dome match for him, probably not a main event, but it's getting to the point where I just don't think that he can, you know, have any of those big singles matches anymore. I think it's kind of more of the multi-person matches.
Yeah, that's it's a challenge for MJF to go in there, and you know they've established it's going to be the opening match. I would only wrestle at Forbidden Door if it was a first match. I told Tony Khan because I don't have to spend any more time in Toronto than I have to watching washed up jabroni Japanese wrestlers. Great heel line, also a good way to not demean the world title by going on first by making it clear storyline wise within the narrative it was MJF's insistence. I think it's a good way to kick off the show. He'll get booed. Tanahashi will be cheered wildly. And the expectations aren't super high in terms of the athleticism. MJF can do, pull all the tricks out of his bag of tricks to tell a really compelling story. And Tanahashi is going to, body language-wise, going to be able to play off of the stuff that Punk is doing. So I think they'll be fine because, it's news to some people that the goal of every wrestling match isn't to rate 4 or 5 stars on that scale. You know, your job is to tell stories in the ring, entertain, know your spot on the card, not show up something that's happening later in ways that are unnecessary, that don't serve the greater good. All of that dynamic is going on. And I just think MJF is astute in the game and smart enough to know that, and Tanahashi too. So I am not fearful of the match. I just think, you want to have a talk with Tanahashi beforehand, or, if you're MJF, suggesting things for the match, and don't suggest things that might go wrong. Like, just, play to Tanahashi's strengths and don't put him in a position. And I don't want to make too much of him slipping on the top rope, but it happened, So maybe you don't work stuff like that into the match. To me, I think they position things well. You're not going to watch Tanahashi tonight and think, oh, this guy might beat MJF, and it's like, it's what it is. It's clear what it is. And I think a casual fan out there is probably wondering, okay, well, this guy doesn't look very good. He looks fine. It doesn't look special. I don't really see this. But the crowd is treating him like royalty. And that's what you need. You just need the crowd, the ticket-buying smart audience, to tell the masses who are watching through their reaction to him that, hey, he may not jump off the screen as spectacular anymore, but there's something about him. There's a history to him. And, Kevin Kelly mentioning he was part of Three Musketeers with Shinsuke Nakamura. It's like, okay, this guy is a legend. And people are going to pick up on that. It's the opening match. And I'd be more worried about almost everybody else in terms of the top-tier AEW wrestlers wrestling him other than MJF. I just think MJF will be fine.
Yeah, what they're planning to do there is exactly what they want to do is give MJF a good win against a legend in Tanahashi.
He can brag about incessantly.
It doesn't have to be, the 4-star plus match. I guess I'm saying, but but also I want to add, too, that I thought the commentary did a really good job of covering for Tanahashi, you know, slipping on that rope, also Swerve coming up there. So I thought that they played that off really well. I just think that this was definitely a marker for people who have been watching Tanahashi for a long time that, you know, he is definitely past the point of, you know, giving you that great athletic four-star plus match. But I think that there's a lot of other things he does very well to get himself over that I think that the MJF match will accomplish what it needs to.
Couple things to add to that, too. I think Swerve deserves a lot of the credit for running up to the top rope. You could see that him calling that. Mm-hmm. I was right in the corner. I was on the floor right by the ramp, so I had a really good view of that corner. And, yeah, Swerve ran straight up and said, go with it, and ran up to the rope, and that they were able to audible out of that. But also, MJF is not Swerve Strickland. Swerve needs to move. Swerve needs to be flippy and athletic. MJF can just wrestle on the ground. And Tana should be able to do that. So I don't think that's going to be as big of a worry. But without the high fly flow, is he still Tanahashi? You know, that's kind of the hallmark of his offense. And if we're not going to get to see it, it's going to feel kind of different.
Chris, talk about what else stood out on the show to you. I'll fill in with some other follow-up questions. But, yeah, I'm curious what comes to mind for you.
Okay. I think the match that really stood out to me was Brody King and Andrade. They absolutely beat the living daylights out of each other. It was stiff. It was entertaining. There's a bit too much repetition, but Andrade got practically no reaction when he came out. But by the end of the match, he had the crowd behind him, which is not something I've ever been able to say about him before. I think he's really found another level, and that match should do a lot to help him, you know, grow. We're obviously waiting until we're allowed to have CMLL people on the card again, or they figure out if they're ever having Roosh back so that he can get some friends against the House of Black. But I think that really stood out, that one did. The women's match, I think AEW has got a lot of stick for not building characters. And I think what I saw today is that they've done a really good job with some people, but then they've let them sit. Nyla Rose has so much personality. She's incredible on Twitter. When she comes out, her entrance and her demeanor, her charisma in the ring is incredible, but we just never see her. I know she's not a great wrestler, but just seeing how she worked the crowd today on her way to the ring, I think they're missing the boat there with her.
That's an interesting observation. I agree, by the way. I think that mm-hmm. she has been inconsistently used and underutilized and belongs in a more prominent and protected role than she's in. And it's interesting to get the perspective in the building that you saw that and think the same way. Go ahead, Chris. Yeah, anything else that you want to bring up?
Yeah, sorry. There's a really loud entrance happening for Ring of Honor right now. That's got kind of distracted.
Oh, sure.
No, I think overall the night just felt incredible. Like, I've been a CM Punk fan for a long time, and some of his actions have disappointed me, but finally getting to see him live, that was a moment. Seeing Tanahashi live was a moment. Well, at least his entrance, the match was a little bit of a letdown. But just the atmosphere in this building tonight, if that's half of what we get tomorrow night, tomorrow should be incredible. I don't see how anyone is going to miss that show. It's just that the two main events would have been enough. I don't know if anything got added to the card tonight. We couldn't really tell in arena. They didn't announce anything. So did we get any extra matches?
Joel, I don't think so. I actually wasn't even
we
paying close
attention. We got some 0 hour matches. Yes.
So what did they add? I wasn't even paying attention to the plugs.
Yep, so we got United Empire of Jeff Cobb, Kyle Fletcher, and TJP is going to face Los Ingobernables of Shingo, Bushi, and Hiromu. We also have Stu Grayson versus El Fantasmo, and we have the Mogul Embassy of Swerve Strickland, Toa Leona, and not sure how to pronounce it, Khan, K-A-U-N,
yeah.
versus Rocky Romero, Trent Beretta, and El Desperado.
Interesting. All of those people were on Ring of Honor tonight, by the way.
Oh, interesting. Chris, I want to, as you talk about the crowd tomorrow night, was there any sense anybody was a more casual fan in the build? Like, was there any sense that you got that while there's vocal fans who are reacting to the New Japan Legends and kind of, you know, very into the product, is AEW drawing any casual audience who are kind of like more following the bellwether fans, the thought leaders in the crowd, the vocalist fans? Were there any families, or is it just – yeah, go ahead, yeah.
It's funny you should say that. I didn't see too many families, but there were a lot of guys there with their girlfriends. And especially in my section, there were a lot of guys explaining to their girlfriends who some of the people were. I don't know how this came across on TV, but the majority of the Japanese talent got the biggest pots. I mean, obviously, Punk and FTR got the biggest ones, but the Japanese talent, especially the legendary names, got really good reactions, which suggests to me that people know who they are. There were some casual fans there. There were some people who had to get stuff explained. But I find that in Canada, because we don't get many events, people are willing to travel a long way. I flew 5 hours to get here today. And there was another guy sitting in front of us who came from Prince Edward Island, which is only half an hour or so in the air closer. But yet it would probably be just as easy for us to get to Boston, but it's a whole other country. So when you see something in Toronto, you get a lot of people who would never travel to events coming to these things, and they bring people with them and make a vacation out of it. So there's probably a few more casual fans around than you would normally expect because they're in the city anyway. So they go, might as well go to the show with you and see what all the fuss is about. And nobody seemed to be bored. I didn't see anyone sitting on their phones or yawning, and people were getting into it. And, you know, for varying reasons, there were a few people enjoying Ricky Stark's presence, for example, maybe not for his wrestling talent, maybe for other reasons, but, you know, to each their own. We're not going to judge.
Another question, this is kind of hard to answer, but because the New Japan talent is there, and you just said they got the best reactions of the night for the most part, did it seem weird going to an AEW show that did not feature so many of the top-tier talent from Dynamite? Like, it stood out, you know, that the you know, top matches. Maybe the top two matches are not getting hyped on Collision, other than the announcers, that the wrestlers aren't present. Did that jump out to you? And this is kind of maybe going further than you can say, but does it feel like Collision will hold up without the Japanese wrestlers if you also aren't featuring Kenny and the Bucks and Hangman and Moxley and maybe, you know, Danielson also on a regular basis, maybe MJF? Can you strip away the Japan stuff and get an idea of if the show felt empty without some of those key names?
I'm going to try and talk through this and sort of give you my flow of thinking on this, because when they announced the brackets for the Owen Hart and Roderick Strong versus Samoa Joe was announced, I remembered that Roderick Strong was still on the roster. Scorpio Sky cut a heck of a promo. That might be the best promo I've ever heard him cut. And he's coming back. And there are people that fans are going to be excited to see who still have to fill in these gaps. In terms of what will happen when the Japanese talent is gone, it's really interesting timing starting a new show right now when nothing is happening storyline-wise. I think this year they've done a better job of kind of weaving in a little bit of storyline here and there and just throwing some Japanese talent in on top of existing story. It does feel almost like you're stepping out of time. It's like you're outside the timeline. It's an alternate universe, whatever you want to call it. But it's not as jarring as it was last year. The BCC and the Elite, for example, they're just scattering in a couple of Japanese names. MJF is still being MJF and not wanting to wrestle, but has been tricked into it by his presumed next opponent for the world title. So I think they're going to be okay. I was worried when I saw the number. I mean, they're touting it as a big success and 800,000 and number 3 in the cable rankings, and I'm just sitting here thinking, yes, but that's the first week, and it's going to go down from there. I don't know what they're hoping to get, and when I listened to Tony Khan's press conference, he didn't know what they were hoping to get. But if on the strength of the first two shows, I think it should be okay.
Yeah. I'm real interested starting next week, you know, how much talent from Dynamite comes over. Joel, what do you think of that same question? You don't have to be in the building to have an opinion on that.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that really stands out to me is obviously they picked a lot of these wrestlers who had I would say, hit a ceiling on Dynamite, you know, where they were really at a certain level. You think of the House of Black, and there's some frustration there, you know, wanting to be at a higher level. Same with Miro, Andrade El Idolo. And I think right now it's tough because the show is really being carried by the one big major star in CM Punk. But the show also allows for that platform for these other people to raise their ceilings where they couldn't do so because of so many other people at the top that who are on Dynamite. You know, we did get Chris Jericho tonight, but, you know, Jericho is kind of a main person on Dynamite. You got the Blackpool Combat Club. You have the Elite over there. You have Adam Cole. So many other people who are taking up those really prestigious spots. And so I think that over time, you know, if we can get more hugely motivated performances out of people like Andrade, you know, they can really raise the prestige of the show by creating stars themselves instead of trying to inject other stars from Dynamite, you know, or from Ring of Honor, which is just going to bloat the roster even more. I like right now that it feels like it is more stripped down, but these people do need to prove themselves and get over with the crowd so that they can carry the show themselves.
I think as well, what you saw tonight was Punk is bringing people along with him. Ricky Starks has been sort of just off the boil for a little while, but the rub he got tonight from that match is going to help him for a long time. He was mega over. They brought the faces back into the ring to address the crowd at the end, and he got the best reaction of all four of them. And I think as well, Jay White got a really good step up in profile from that match. He got the win. He held his own against CM Punk and, in fact, got the better of him on a couple of occasions. If this is how they're going to use Punk on Collision to bring people up to his level so you have a viable and expanded main event picture, I think that's going to be a really big help.
How did the crowd react to the wrestlers that AEW is going to be leaning on as Collision exclusives, probably, such as Miro's vignette, Andrade, Brody? You mentioned Ricky Starks. Powerhouse Hobbs, that's the other one. Does it seem like the fans are into them enough that, that's enough of a supporting crew? You don't need, in fact, one of the criticisms of AEW last year is that they had too many wrestlers that fans wanted to see more of, and there wasn't enough real estate in terms of prime time, meaningful hours of television, and Rampage kind of lost that pretty early, to be featured on a regular basis where they would keep their momentum and where the wrestlers who have pride and high hopes and aspirations to be leaned on and valued, they want starting minutes. They don't want bench minutes. And they want to be in every game. Even if they're not a starter, they want lots of minutes on the court, on the ice, on the field, and they weren't getting it. And so do they have that core of starters based on how Toronto was responding to them tonight?
With Hobbs, it's hard to say. He had a squash match, and he just basically threw the poor guy around for a bit. I mean, he got good reactions in oohs and ahs, but at that clothesline spot where he held him up, that was pretty cool, and it was unique. There are no degrees of unique. Chris, my grandfather would kill me if I tried that. But it looked pretty cool. Andrade and Brody King put on a really good match, like I mentioned earlier, and they brought the crowd into it with them. I think that's going to help them a lot. Who were the other ones? Miro's promo, we were just sort of listening to it going, yeah, typical Miro promo, yeah, my God, my beautiful, wait a minute, what? You're renouncing them? What? Are you divorced now? Like, what does that even mean? So
yes,
it was almost curious and weird. I think it's made me want to see what he's going to come out and do for the next couple of weeks. Is he just going to come out, beat the living daylights out of someone and go back? Like, I don't know. Miro seems to be his own worst enemy because he has these kooky ideas for gimmicks, and then it ruins any mystique that he had. But yeah, I think there's a lot of potential there, and they didn't do anything tonight to ruin anybody. Let's put it that way.
Joel, same question to you.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, too, is when you look at the wrestlers who are on the show, there's some guys who are kind of more Dynamite mainstays. I'm talking more of the exclusive Collision. And a lot of them have been traditionally booked as heels in AEW. You know, you look at Swerve Strickland, Miro, Andrade, Brody King, the whole House of Black, Scorpio Sky, Powerhouse Hobbs. I think they need to do a better job of identifying more baby faces for this show. You know, obviously the big ones are CM Punk, FTR, and Ricky Starks. But a lot of these people have just been framed as heels. And, you know, Miro, too, I think that what his whole message there was he wanted to move away from those promos that people really liked. You know, they were entertained by, but they were more kind of funny. You know, they were more kind of taking Miro a little less seriously, whereas I think he wanted to pivot into more of a serious direction. And maybe, you know, some of the language that he used there is, you know, a little bit jarring from what he was saying before, but clearly trying to move in that direction. Andrade, you know, are people going to buy him as more of a baby face here? You know, that's definitely how he was positioned in this match. You know, is he gonna fall more into that? He was definitely motivated more. But I think that, you know, we've seen these people get over to a certain level on Dynamite, but like you said, they lost momentum because there's only so much TV time for them. And you know, the regular stars, the Elite, Black Bull Comic Club, those are who are going to get those top spots. And so I think that there is an opportunity for these people to get over again to that position that they were at before. I mean, I think of Malakai Black when he was doing the stuff against Cody when he first came in. I mean, people were saying he had a super high ceiling. He could be a big star with them. And, you know, things just really kind of cooled off from there. And I think that, you know, if some of these people can catch wind, definitely I think there's opportunity for a lot of them to carry the show.
Chris, how about the reactions of Japanese wrestlers? Can you rank them? In fact, I know we have an email on this, so I might as well throw it. Yeah, I believe we did. Between Naito and Tanahashi, who comes off as a more major star tonight? He wanted to know that, and you would be able to, I think, convey that from a crowd reaction standpoint.
I think Naito by a significant distance, but that could be because he was something of a surprise. Tanahashi was announced, and I think he just Naito seemed like a bigger star because he was a surprise. So yeah, that would be my answer there. It'll be interesting to see if that carries over tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. Was there anything off air that you want to convey from the show tonight, Chris? Anything? I know you're missing the ROH tapings, but anything else in terms of Tony Khan coming out or fan signs or yeah, any other observations?
There was a sign that said MJF is ticklish, which Dasha was a big fan of. That was interesting. They really need to step up their merch game. I know you've mentioned several times this was a company founded on T-shirt sales, essentially. And they had a CM Punk shirt, they had an FTR shirt, they had a Canada Summer Tour, and just a straight-up AEW Collision shirt. And that's it. They had, like, some replica belts and stuff that are way out of my price range. But no Adam Cole, no Elite, no Kenny Omega, nothing. Just those shirts.
And were the lines super long, like they traditionally are?
Yes, like wrapped around.
And what were people buying? CM Punk? FTR? What was kind of the main stuff?
The Canada Tour shirt was selling really well. It was just a straight AEW logo in red and white.
Yeah.
But the shirt's $50 Canadian. And, you know, we really get hammered on shipping textiles to Canada that you often have to pay duty at the border in addition to the conversion of the shipping. But, man, $50 for a T-shirt, it's steep. I'm not willing to shell that out, having spent what I spent on tickets for tonight and tomorrow. So, you know, I was ready to drop some money, but tonight I paid $130. Tomorrow, it's in the 600s. I'm not ashamed to admit it.
Was that resale or just right through AEW?
No, straight through AEW. I'm on floor southwest, so right by the ramp, like fifth row. Third seat in, so I can basically reach out and touch people. Unfortunately, they're all going the other side of the ramp, but you know, it's a really good seat.
Great.
Yeah, the merchandise is curious why they do that. Andrew from HX Ontario sent a photo of the merch stand, and he said, I couldn't help but notice how lacking the merchandise stand is. The only talent shirts were CM Punk and FTR, and the rest were generic, and they're $50 each. AW is putting so much money on the table by not featuring more talent, not even a scissor finger. Why do they do this? I am baffled by that. And I don't know that I've heard Tony be asked that in any of his Q&As, but that'd be a good one to queue up.
He'd probably just say something about how excited they are to have such a great card for Forbidden Door and the how great the atmosphere is in the locker room. So I don't know that you'd get much of an answer. He did that. Fair enough. He came out twice.
That is...
And he's even more awkward in person.
Just, everybody. We know that. Anybody who's been to an AEW show and seen him knows there's an awkwardness to his public presentation. But there's an enthusiasm that I think fans like. You know, they like.
Contagious.
The knock on Vince McMahon is he didn't like professional wrestling. You know, like that he didn't like great wrestling. He didn't want to name moves. He wasn't, you know, everything was a performance and it was all about business and muscles, muscular guys. Oh, you know, look, the most enthusiastic he ever was during the WBF days, you know, reacting to guys posing or flexing. Obviously Tony's a huge wrestling fan. So that works in his favor. But yeah, I mean, he doesn't present himself in a traditional wrestling promoter manner. I can't think of anybody in history who even is close to his category of personality in front of fans.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Tony Khan is one of us. I was on RSPW at the same time he was. He feels like somebody gave him a bunch of money and let him play EWR with real wrestlers. That's what it feels like.
Yep.
And, you know, like, more power to him. He's a billionaire. He can do that.
Yeah. All right, Chris, anything else you want to add before we let you go and we move on to others?
I'm super excited for tomorrow night. I was hoping to see Okada tonight, but I will settle for seeing him tomorrow. No guarantee I will not be in tears when I call in to Wrestling Night in America tomorrow, because I live in the middle of nowhere. You know, I call in to the post show quite a lot, and Newfoundland is not exactly the capital of entertainment. It's an hour and a half behind Eastern time. We're on an island. Nobody ever comes to us. So for me to fly out here for something like this is a big deal, and It's my Taylor Swift concert. What can I say? And I'm going to be in a wreck. I barely held it together for CM Punk tonight. So Athena is now beating the living daylights out of some poor woman. I think the Ring of Honor matches actually tonight, I'll end on this, have been surprisingly good. We got a lot of surprises. Desperado came out. We got a six-man tag with LIJ. We just saw United Empire lose to Christopher Daniels, Action Andretti, and Darius Martin, which I think I could have put severe amounts of money against that result, but here we are. So the Ring of Honor matches have been surprisingly entertaining. If you if you're on Honor Club, I highly recommend checking out the next few weeks of matches, because what I've seen has looked pretty entertaining.
Awesome, Chris. Great talking to you. I'm glad you had such a great time, and I am going to live vicariously through you tomorrow, living on an isolated island with no big name entertainment. You're going to be in tears. I'll shed a tear in support of your experience, because it's obviously, you know, seeing those everybody that you're going to see tomorrow in person and not being able to have seen them before is pretty cool.
That's time for everyone, right? I'll send you some pictures if anything special comes up, but I'll be listening to the roundtable with interest as well.
Nice. Excellent. Thanks, Chris. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, bud.
So tomorrow night, he mentioned Wrestling Night in America. Greg Parks will be hosting the post show. Chris will be calling in to that. It'll be the free post show on the PW Torch Daily Cast feed. You can find the link to that show in my report at pwtorch.com. I'll be covering the pay-per-view live with a written report tomorrow night covering Forbidden Door. And so if you want to live stream and listen or call in or email the show, you are invited. Greg Parks to be hosting. While he's doing that for everybody for free, I'll be hosting the roundtable with Todd Martin and Rich Fan, reviewing the show for our VIP members. We did 90 minutes last year on the show. We just put that up as a free sample on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast feed this week. So if you want to hear what we had to say about last year's event, it has been released as a free show. It is following what we posted yesterday, which was the Tony Khan Forbidden Door media Q&A. So right after that, we run our roundtable from last year. So if you're looking to get warmed up on Sunday for Forbidden Door, those are back-to-back segments in on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast feed, our Blue Logo show. But you can listen live within minutes after Forbidden Door tomorrow night, and Greg Parks will be hosting and taking calls. All right, let's jump to David Bryant in North Carolina. He is the AEW Collision hits and misses contributor, and it's great to have him on the show, and it's always fun talking AEW with him. David, welcome.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, good. Thanks for calling up.
Yeah, awesome.
You said you took some notes.
Well, I took notes. I took some notes for the column, and I'm gonna save some of those for the column. I want to say I loved your last caller that you just had, and I loved the stuff he was saying about Night of the Lows, because I feel like I've been saying some of that in the Dark Elevation to friends in private, but nobody's listening. But I think that she's underutilized. She is so charismatic. She is so intimidating. I mean, she looks like a monster in the ring. And honestly, he said that she could improve in wrestling, and everybody can improve with wrestling. But I feel like she has improved in wrestling. I feel like she's put in a lot of work. If you look at where she was when she first stepped foot into the company versus where she is now, I was doing the Dark Elevation reports a while back, and there was one point in time where it looked like she must have lost like 50 pounds. Like she was really trying to get that push and that excitement, that success, and it didn't quite come. And I think they're missing a major boat because the guy talked about her promos and how she goes off, and she really does. Like she is a woman Twitter read feed. She's as vicious, as cold as anything Tina Fey could write for Mean Girls. And I think it would be excellent if they made her, built her up as a genuine threat, not just put her alone against, against Statlander and had Statlander beat her, but built her up as a legitimate threat. And they can have her lose, but they make it mean something when it happens. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned it earlier, and I was agreeing to Chris. I agree with you. I am hoping Collision, Joel, turns out to be fertile ground for the women to get more than the obligatory, near the bottom of the second hour match that is kind of there so they can either fill some time if the show's running short or be cut if it's running long. And it doesn't feel like a focus, and it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. We've said it before, Tony Khan is a big wrestling fan, but it doesn't seem like women's wrestling is a passion. I wouldn't say that he dismisses it entirely, but it's not a passion. And it'd be nice to have Collision be an excuse for both Collision and Dynamite now to feature more women's wrestling, because he doesn't then have to knock some of the men who are arguably already bigger stars and cut their minutes down on the show. Joel, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, make Collision a platform to really build stars, not just feature matches and feature stars on there, but really make it a point to that you're going to see the people who are up and coming, who are going to be put into prominent positions. And I have said the same thing about Nyla Rose for a while, that she just continues to – she is really passionate about what she does. And you can see that with just these little mannerisms, that she's not just a green wrestler who's coming in here playing the beast role. She came in, they gave her a good push from the beginning, when they were still finding their ground in the women's division, trying to see, throw people out there, see who's gonna stick. And I think that Nyla has really put in the work and proven that she, I don't know exactly what the ceiling is, but definitely it can be somebody who is featured in a role. I think that people, they've seen her enough. She's one of the originals in the company that I think people can buy her at another level. And I thought that, the match tonight again with Nyla, with Willow Nightingale, that was a fine, good match. I think that Willow shows, how much that she can get herself over with the crowd. She shows a lot of personality there. So I just think that this really can be, another platform for them to show off more of the women's wrestling and not make it just something that you have to have on the show, just to check that box. I think that there's so many talented people that you can really make that an emphasis on the Collision show. Tony has an opportunity to redefine, what is exactly is AEW. We talk about what is their identity, and, their identity really is that they put on a lot of, really good matches, and they feature a lot of really good matches, and they throw a lot of stuff out there. And some stuff, most of the stuff works, some of the stuff doesn't work. And I think that, the Collision is just an opportunity for him to really identify what he wants AEW to be moving forward. I think that a lot of people have made comments saying, that Collision feels totally different. It feels like something, like it's booked by somebody else. And I wouldn't go that far. It still feels like AEW. But, there's other people who are out there, and it feels like that there's more possibilities there's different things that can happen other than we know kind of who the top role players are, and it's not going to change a whole lot. There might be some people who get featured a little bit more than others, but he can really define that and make it something that's different. I think people also really like in Collision that it definitely does not feel like the Elite show. You know, even though there is some comedy in there, it just feels less of that brand of wrestling. And I think that that very much appeals to a certain kind of wrestling fan who felt alienated in the beginning of AEW, that, you know, people were trying to, there was a lot of intrigue. People wanted to know what it was going to be. And some people were disappointed when it turned out to be more kind of, you know, putting a lot of indie wrestling kind of put on a major scale. And I think that, you know, now is the perfect opportunity to change some of that narrative.
David, back to you.
I like agree with 100% of that. I don't have anything to counter that with. That was, I felt like my ideas and what I was thinking was sort of stepped out of my head, and he just expressed them. That was really accurate. You know, I agree. I hope that they have a good plan for the women's match at All In. I'm hoping it's going to be something awesome that'll feature, you know, feature Jamie Hibby, and she'll be able to come back in time. And I hope they have a good plan in place for that. I also wanted to point out, you know, last week I mentioned QT Marshall and Hobbs. They don't quite go together. They're very oil and water. And I like the way they featured Hobbs tonight. You know, they had him come out. They had him be a beast. Had him be a monster. They used QT Marshall well this week on Rampage. Like what he was doing on Rampage, you know, being humorous, you know, the stuff he was doing with the Acclaimed, that feels like it fits him. And I feel like what they're doing with Powerhouse Hobbs on the show tonight is so much better than having, you know, sort of the Norman Rockwell clown in QT Marshall as his mouthpiece. He squashed a guy, beat him up. It reminded me of his old Dark Elevation matches. You know, he is a monster. I think they should let him be a monster, and I hope we get to see more of that going forward, because I think he could be something really big, if pretty right.
Joel, what do you think of Hobbs' presentation now compared to recent weeks, compared to recent years, and what is his potential to get the bandwidth he needs, the space, the TV time, the creative energy to become a more consistent, significant player? I know, you know, he just won a dominant squash match tonight, but it's still, you know, he's a powerhouse. That's why it's his nickname. His body language is snarl. He's different than a lot of the wrestlers on the roster in terms of his being a powerhouse and not super flashy. Is there a place for him? Is it more of a role player? Or is there room for him to be like a top heel opponent for Punk, assuming Punk is matching against heels and not faces over the next couple months?
I'm just going to need to see him be more dynamic. You know, I'm going to need to see him be more dynamic than past. You know, like some of the criticisms of him in the past have been a snarling heel who just kind of throws people around. But we've always seen that there's a lot of potential there. And so I haven't seen him get to that next layer yet of who he can be, showing more personality. I definitely don't think that an association with QT Marshall is going to help anybody at this point. So you definitely want to move away from that, pivot away from that into another direction. I thought that, you know, obviously where he was in the beginning, the stuff with Team Taz worked really well because he fit into that role of that muscle guy, but he's going to have to do more than just squashing people, and he's going to have to prove that he's capable of having these really good, you know, just kind of all-out brawl matches, you know, like some of the stuff that we saw from Brody King and Andrade El Idolo, that I want to see Powerhouse Hobbs, even though that, you know, that's his thing, is he's going to squash people right now, and that's going to work for a while, but I need to see him do a little bit more in the ring, develop more of a personality, and then I think I could see him, you know, elevating to the next level. But right now, as the presentation stands, I think he's kind of hit that ceiling.
David, back to you.
I can see it. I think he does have in him more charisma. I don't think he's shown it yet on mainstream television. When they were doing the album, where people were picking black artists and they were putting songs in the album. They would describe the songs. I remember they did an interview with him, and he wasn't snarling. He was just talking to us, and I thought, he's such a likable person. Like, it was just a surprising thing you didn't expect from someone who looks like him to be doing that. And another moment was on the pre-show for the last pay-per-view. I think it was the last one. He did an interview, maybe the one before that. He did an interview with RJ City. And, you know, they were just joking. And RJ City made a reference to something sexually inappropriate. That pretty much most of his references. But he played off of it very well and joked back with a quip about can RJ touch it. But it worked. And I do think he has those layers. But you're right. He has to show that as well, and not just on a pre-show or on Dark Elevation, but actually show that. I wanted to ask, oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I wanted to ask,
what do you think? I'm shocked, even given that I did see, you know, Tanahashi, he sort of bumbled a bit. I'm shocked that they're putting MJF on first with him for the title. Do you think the reason is just, you know, Tanahashi's 46, and, you know, and he did slip up a couple of places in this match. Is it just that, or do they think they have something big planned to close the show that we don't know about? Is it going to be Jungle Boy and Sonata? I mean, is it going to be a heel turn from Perry? Like, what do you think the purpose of the placement of that from the very beginning of the card is?
I think they know that it's not the main event of the show in many people's eyes. That Tanahashi is late in his career, and it is a world title match. So you want to create a reason for that world title match not going on last. And I just don't think you can put MJF Tanahashi on after Danielson and Okada, or Omega and Ospreay for that matter. So and the big tag match. So I just think that MJF's saying, I don't want to be in Canada any longer than I have to be, so I'm going to get in, do the first match. That's the only reason I told Tony the only way I'll wrestle in the show is if I'm on first, I can get out of town. It's a way to protect the world title, to keep the world title from seeming like it's not prestigious or it's not a primary happening. Joel, do you agree with that? And do you have a prediction on what match goes last? I think, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, what we've heard as the rumor is that actually the match going on last would be Okada and Bryan Danielson, which, I mean, that's going to be one hell of a match, but it's going to be so hard to follow Ospreay and Omega. Your point before, Wade, that it's traditionally Tony Khan has booked, you know, the world title match as the match that goes on last, almost with no exception, except for when they do the Anarchy in the arena, because, you know, it's brawling all over the arena. It's crazy with all the big stars. And so this gives them an out to do that in the beginning, because as we all talked about Tanahashi before, that, you know, even Tanahashi just last year against Jon Moxley, he's in a different spot now, where it's not going to be that huge, long, athletic match. And I think that you still hit all the beats of what you're trying to accomplish with him facing MJF, something that he can brag about in that victory. But as you mentioned, I mean, it's going to be tough for anything to follow Omega versus Ospreay and Okada versus Danielson. I mean, those are like generational dream matches, you know, to have on one show that you just can't water it down with something else. Now, is there going to be any other big angles on the show? I'm certain of it, you know, that there'll be something along there. But, I mean, I think it's just going to close out with just an epic, epic match.
David, back to you.
Okay, do you think it was a mistake to put Tanahashi on tonight? I mentioned in private, I don't know if I mentioned it in last week's, but the idea, the value of maybe saving these people for not having them on, having them on TV is a great thing, but having the first time they actually have a major fight that people have seen on American television in mainstream American television in a year, having it be for $50 on pay-per-view, because you're asking somebody to pay so much money and saving up that moment for the people to be like, hey, what are they going to look like? Are they going to be up to snuff? Do you think that putting Tanahashi on here and having him wander a little bit and not bow in the way that I think people could have expected might hurt rather than help?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. I've seen other people comment on that too. My vote would have been to save him for just the pay-per-view, but I also I mean, if the goal – Swerve lost, but there's something about having shared the ring with Tanahashi, and if he happens to be in the city, in the country, you want to get more out of him. And, Joel, yeah, I mean, how do you feel about that? Does Swerve gain more from being, you know, competitive with him for 10, 11, 12 minutes, but losing, but having that match on his record? Or and so there's the Swerve aspect of it, and then – does Tanahashi lose some of the shine if he's, in a way you could say from a kayfabe storyline standpoint, not taking his world title match all that seriously, if he's wrestling 24 hours ahead of time against a formidable opponent and MJF is resting up? It doesn't make it seem like, you know, hey, he should be saving himself up too. Why is he fighting a rather meaningless match 24 hours before he has a chance to win a world title?
Yeah, I think you could argue that in multiple different ways, and I don't think that anyone's going to be wrong with that. That, you know, the reason why you're paying $50 to see the pay-per-view is because it's the dream matches with much higher stakes, you know, and so on TV against Swerve Strickland, of course, that's awesome for Swerve to get that, to have a singles match against Tanahashi, and, you know, we've made the point about Tanahashi that it's not going to be, you know, epic. You know, at this stage of the game. And so I think that it's fine to show that, because there's been some negative criticism that they're putting Tanahashi in a world title match. Does that water down the AEW world title that he hasn't, you know, really been winning all that much in New Japan? You know, he's just had this one match here in AEW, so it gives him something against somebody that people view Swerve Strickland as somebody who's going to be something down the road, someone who's going to be an up-and-coming star, that for Tanahashi to come in, it's something that's believable for him to get a win, so it's not him, you know, defeating somebody else who is a major star at this point. Gives you a little bit of taste of the New Japan wrestlers to get people, you know, that last kind of day before, do I buy it, do I not buy it, you know, gives them a little bit more of that intrigue. So I'm not opposed at all to Tanahashi wrestling on TV and having some of these guys appear on TV, because you got to introduce these guys to the audience. And I think that doing this once a year, seeing more of these people on TV, having the Forbidden Door, is going to get more of the people who are not watching New Japan more acquainted with these guys and say, okay, yeah, I can understand why people would be interested in this. I can understand why this Forbidden Door show is a big deal for people who watch all different types of wrestling. So I'm not opposed to that at all.
David, back to you.
I was following what you were saying about Miro, too. I wanted to say that I don't know that he should abandon the Redeemer gimmick. I'm just surprised to see him having another breakup with God. Like, they're such teenagers. It's like Kevin Williamson's directing Miro's relationship with God. But I think some of the best, like, you know, heat and vibes he's gotten is the idea that he's talking about his hot, flexible wife. And the whole reign when he had the custom TNT title belt, and he was talking about, you know, God blessing him with it and giving it to him, and, you know, he had that righteousness on his side when he was fighting. It felt like such a good character, and I don't want to see him slip back into anything close to video game Miro or, you know,
blonde
some of the
Miro
stuff that he was trying before. Yeah, no, not video game character, the video game lover Miro, who had an arcade match as a main event, in which they first that vendor popped out of a arcade machine on national television. Definitely search for that. But do you think he's helping, hurting? But what should he just stick with this Redeemer gimmick?
Joel, what do you think?
Well, he's pivoted away from it. You know, the Redeemer, he says, kneels before no man or God. You know, he's seeking righteousness without reward. He renounces his wife. You know, he says, I am Miro, I am gutless. And so I think he's just kind of going for more, you know, less of the God, the promos. Like I said, a lot of that stuff people liked it. It was very entertaining, but I don't know if it got him to the same place that he wanted to be. I think he wanted to be seen as more of kind of the monster heel, but he the reason for that is because of God, because of his wife and stuff. And now I think he's just kind of stripping away that layer of his character to being something a little more simple, where he's just, you know, believes in himself. So, I mean, we'll see what some of the follow-up looks like for it, but I think that it just kind of makes him a little more, you know, less flavor to that character.
I think the challenge with the whole Redeemer thing is, like, how do you explain that to somebody, and how does that affect his matches, his character? How do wins and losses affect him? Why is he... Who is he going after, and how does he have personal feuds with them? And it's sort of like Malakai Black's interviews, Bray Wyatt's interviews. They're cool, and there's something there, but it feels elusive how you translate that into the wins and losses and the personal rivalries and chasing titles. And I don't think he ever gained that traction beyond the creative vignettes that grabbed people's attention. Now, part of that is he just didn't get momentum in general. So in a way, he's abandoning something that people thought was cool without really seeing it through all the way. But I'm not lamenting him pivoting to something else if he thinks he has a better idea. That just ultimately feels more grounded. I think there's some, you know, fun, compelling vignettes and promos that wrestlers come up with that just don't gain traction as a wrestling character trying to win titles and win matches. And so maybe that could have gone somewhere if he had stuck around and been a weekly fixture, but if he's got something new in mind, I'm okay with him pivoting away and not, it's not gibberish. It's not, I don't even know how to describe, but you know, having this just place he goes where you're, it's almost like a therapy session. And yeah, I just don't know where that was heading. So in a way I wish I kind of got a chance to see it play out, but maybe it isn't a good fit for the way AEW books and where, yeah, he can gain the most traction as a top heel or top babyface who fans are cheering because it's more grounded in wrestling matches. David, you can respond to that or bring something else up.
Well, I guess I just feel I kind of agree with you. You make good points. You make really good points. I guess I'm overly sensitive to it because I really want to see Miro pushed at the very top of the mountain in AEW. I think he missed out on that. And I think a lot of people, I think it's a near consensus that he missed out on that in WWE, that they had something great with him and Lana in the tank riding into WrestleMania, and then they just sort of dropped it, and then they had that stupid Rusev Day gimmick, and he actually managed to get that over with the crowd, and they dropped the ball on it. And I just want to see him. I don't know if he'll succeed at the very top of the mountain, but I'd love to see him put up there and see if he's able to beat his chest, win titles, and make a statement for himself and for the company in that role. Similar to how great Christian's doing with his TNT title run.
Yeah. What else for us, David, if anything else?
Do you think they should just change the rules in tag matches? they obviously just love having everyone just run in. The referee is pointing like they're trying to direct air traffic, and nothing's actually make every single tag match a tornado, Texas tornado match light, and just say people can run in and out. We're just going to stop. This is how tag matches happen here. So at least when I'm watching it, I'm not spending the entire match confused about why the rules no longer matter, but only during this part of it.
Joel, my pick would be to enforce the tag rules and tell the wrestlers, if you're professionals, you can work within the tag rules. We've got plenty of action, plenty of high spots that you can fit in without just completely disregarding tags and five counts and all that. And I think they'd be surprised at what would happen if they had to have that discipline and kind of right within the lines, right within the margins. Some of the best books have been written within margins. In fact, all of them. Joel, what do you think, though?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard the arguments against you on this, Wade, but I'm very much in favor of, like, having rules and sticking to them, you know, because I think it creates another element of drama that there are rules. And, like, and Kevin Kelly, who is better than Kevin Kelly to explain those rules and, like, hold heels accountable for when they break those rules? Because that was the thing in the main event that I think you're probably talking about, David, is that, like, they're doing the ending sequence there, and like Ricky Starks is involved with Jay White and CM Punk's there, and I'm just kind of like, okay, but who's actually tagged into this, or can you just pin anybody, you know? And that really just kind of occurred to me in that moment, that's like, okay, I mean, like, it doesn't matter who's tagged in, it's just whoever gets the pin there. And I just think that takes away some of the drama and actually some of the investment in the first, you know, two-thirds of the match where there's actually tagging and you're building up to the hot tag. And then all of a sudden it just devolves into, you know, these different spots, and then eventually somebody gets pinned and you're like, oh, I guess they were tagged in, or it didn't matter after all.
Agreed.
Exactly.
David, anything else? Anything else you want to add to that or something?
No, that's all for me. Rena? What'd you say?
Yeah. Oh, I just said anything else you want to add.
No, that's all. That's,
like you're done.
That's all for me. I want to ask people to please check out the Hits and Misses column that I'm writing, and I'd like to throw an endorsement in there for anyone who cares about my endorsement, but that they should definitely check out, consider going to VIP to check out the Roundtable post-show. It's one of the best post-shows that you will hear. It's got some genuine and great analysis from people who truly know what they're talking about, who've been following the business for decades, and dig into the issues in a way that is deeper and more serious than some other post-shows dig into it. Not that there's anything wrong with those. I like those too. But I think it's definitely worth that money, and that they should consider going VIP just for that.
Well, David, thank you, and 100%. I will tout your writing. You are talented and entertaining and bring a perspective that's different than the other writers to your writing covering Dark and now Hits and Misses on Collision. So I encourage listeners to check out pwtorch.com. We'll probably have your column up tomorrow or Monday at the latest with your Hits and Misses on Collision. Thanks, David. Great talking to you guys.
No, absolutely. Thank you so much. Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Always great hearing from David. All right. We have another Chris who attended in Toronto who is going to give us his perspective on things. Chris, welcome. Thanks for taking time to talk with us about your experience at the building tonight.
No problem, Wade. How are you doing?
Really good. So where are you? Are you from Toronto?
I used to live in Toronto. I'm British Canadian, same as the other guy as well. But I actually live in Milwaukee right now. But my wife's from Toronto, so we're kind of combining Forbidden Door with a family holiday. I told her about the wrestling.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, that's great. That's great. So, I'm curious if you got a sense of how much, and I don't know how you'd know, but did you get a sense of how many people were from out of town versus people who live in Toronto?
I mean, there were a lot of Blue Jays jerseys, which normally is a pretty big tip-off. It was mainly like 50-50. Like, a few of the guys I was talking to around were from the city or from the burbs, generally. So I was talking to a few people on the floor. So it was definitely a mix, but I got the impression that a lot of people were from the town. I mean, I was not going to Collision until about Thursday, and then they dropped the prices, and I could get a floor ticket really cheap, so I just figured, why not? But even my friends who I'm going with tomorrow night weren't all that bothered about going, so I just kind of went solo tonight.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So we got to talk about Punk and the crowd reaction to him. I asked Chris, the other Chris originally, how much of a buzz was there about Punk before his ring entrance? And then, in the concourse among fans. And then just describe to me as best you can your assessment of how the crowd feels about Punk. Is it playful? Is it dead serious and they want to punch people who think differently than them, which I've run into with some emails and social media? You know, and I'm like, don't really feel like I've taken sides, but if there's anything that even hints towards somebody being more bad this week than last week, oh man, you know, they come after you. How was it in the building? What was the vibe?
It was definitely, I don't think I've experienced much like it where it's been so split. I mean, I've been to a few wrestling events when Cena was around, when you had kind of the dual chanting, and people really didn't like Cena, but there was the kind of, let's go Cena sucks. I think the thing that was really crazy about tonight is you couldn't even get a CM Punk chant going because people were booing over it, and then you couldn't get a boo going because people were doing CM Punk chants over it, and it was quite, I won't say it was like a hostile, it was in fun with the crowd, but there were definitely people who really disliked the guy, and there were definitely people that were really, really pro the guy, and it was really fun, to be honest. It was, FTR seemed like they were having a great time with it, and they even kind of alluded to it in their little speech afterwards, and it was just a really weird but really, really enjoyable atmosphere. Like, I'd say I wasn't planning on going until later this week, and I'm really, really glad I went tonight.
That's great. Did Punk win anyone over or make people more angry as the match went on? Like, was there any kind of change in tone from ring entrance versus late in the match once people just kind of got it out of their system, or did it just intensify and people dug their heels in?
Well, I mean, what was it? I don't know exactly how long, but it felt like quite a long match. I think it was like 20-odd minutes. And the first 10 minutes, like, basically the whole stadium was on their feet. Like, no one sat down for the first 10, 15 minutes of the match. And then people started to settle in a bit towards the end. But, I mean, people were really just wanting to get it off their chest for the first 10, 15 minutes. It was really, like, different. But I think maybe after the match and after it kind of went off air and they were doing more of the in-ring stuff, there was definitely a lot of boos for Punk, but it felt a little bit more playful at that point. But it might have just been because FTR were kind of... Dax came on essentially and just said, I'm just going to talk for a second, then you can get on with booing CM Punk. And that kind of like broke the atmosphere a little bit.
Was there a clear second biggest star and third biggest star in that tag match?
It was really, I mean, I think it was Jay White. Like, I think it was Jay White. I think there was definitely more, Toronto tends to be more of a kind of hardcore crowd. So Jay White was definitely the number two. Like, when him and Punk were going back and forth, there was definitely a reaction, at least on the floor. Yeah, I'd definitely say it was Jay White. I mean, the first 5 minutes, you couldn't tell anything because everyone was just kind of not shutting up and yelling, and you could barely concentrate on the match, to be honest with you. But once they settled in, it was definitely Jay, which is good news.
How about Ricky Starks? No, he hasn't. But did Ricky Starks seem like somebody who belonged in there with Punk, with FDR, with Jay White, or did he feel more like he was... No offense, but at the level of the Guns and Juice, who aren't, you know, at the same level as the others I mentioned in terms of how they're pushed and their perception.
I think it was kind of in the middle, like probably above Juice and but not quite at the level of, say, White and Punk, which obviously isn't yet. But I don't know, it felt like people were really positive on him. Like, yeah, he didn't get the absolute star reaction like a couple of the other guys and even FTR, but I think it was really good for him that match because he did kind of hang with them. And his spear looks so much more impactful live than it does on TV. So I think that helps quite a bit, with the live crowd at least.
Let me throw it to Joel. And Joel, do you have a question for Chris about his experience tonight?
Yeah, I want to ask about, I'm sure at some point in the show, because they did on TV, they go through the whole lineup that's on Forbidden Door. And I just want to know, you know, based on any crowd reactions and feeling in the building, like, what is the match that people, you know, are most excited for? Because there are several matches that could headline the show. You know, I think that's going to be Danielson and Okada. But, you know, what seemed to get the biggest reaction, or what are people most looking forward to?
It was the two that I'd say the main event, the Ospreay Omega and the Danielson Okada. They were both people when they came on the screen were really, really into those two. Nothing else got quite as big a pop, but those two in particular were really, really big. I'd say definitely those two.
And so, do you think that when the show happens, is Kenny Omega, do you think, is he, because of the affiliation with Canada, being from Winnipeg, do you predict that he could be the most over person on that show, or is there somebody else, just based on that lineup, some of the wrestlers you saw tonight, who is going to be, you know, the top star?
I mean, I would imagine just for the Canada link, it'll be Omega. It'll be really interesting to see, with that crowd being so split on Punk tonight, whether it hurts the Elite guys or not. I did get the impression that the people who are anti-Punk are very anti-Punk, but the people that are pro-Punk aren't that anti-Elite, just from kind of the reactions tonight. But maybe that is because of Omega being Canadian. And I mean, this is the first time that Jericho has come out in Canada and not really got cheered. Like, every time that he normally comes out, whether it's a heel or a face, he normally gets really well cheered in Toronto. But tonight, he didn't even get that big a cheer when he came out, which I suppose is as good as he's a heel right now. And Christian was 50-50, being Canadian as well.
Sure.
Anything off air after the show that is of note? Our original on-site correspondent called us like right after Dynamite and wasn't able to convey a lot, but talk about the reaction, the crowd for the Ring of Honor or whatever happened after the Collision event and anything else that happened before and after Collision.
So I left straight after the kind of talk The baby faces in the main event just did a little bit of a talk. Punk spoke very briefly, but it was kind of talk for 30 seconds and get out of there. Before the show, there was the Ring of Honor taping was like pretty good. The before the show thing. I don't know if you saw any spoilers about the Ring of Honor taping at all, but they had L.I.J. the Embassy as like the Ring of Honor main event before the show. So they had Hiromu come out and Shingo and Bushi. So people in my area at least were kind of expecting when Andrade was getting beaten up that those guys would come out again with the L.I.J. links, but nothing happened. But people were kind of a little bit like bummed out by that because I think people were expecting them to come out on Collision and set up a match for Forbidden Door just with them being in the country. But I mean, that was a real nice because I wasn't going to even bother getting it till 8, and then I got here a little early and saw that match, and that was a real nice bonus.
Cool. We asked Chris earlier about crowd responses in the Japanese wrestlers and also AEW Collision exclusive wrestlers. Did anyone, first of all, jump out in terms of the order of who got the best response among the New Japan talent? And then part two, were you surprised by the reaction? Some of the, you know, Andrade, Starks, I guess, sort of counts, certainly Miro, the people who are mainly powerhouse ops, people are mainly appearing on Collision so far.
I mean, Andrade, I thought, got a bigger pop than I was expecting, for sure, especially with, I mean, I don't know if that's because he's been on WWE before and everything, but he definitely got a nice little pop. And then the person who I thought actually got a much bigger reaction than I was expecting was Willow Nightingale. People were really excited to see her at the start of her match, maybe not quite as much during the match, but people were really happy to see her. So I haven't really seen that much of her because I think most of her matches are on Rampage, but yeah, people were really into her, so that was good. But in terms of the actual exclusive wrestlers, yeah, I mean, FTR are popular even with the Punk links. Starks was bigger. I thought the Miro, I heard a couple of people before me talk about the Miro promo. I thought it was really great. Like, I thought it was kind of like keeping the Redeemer gimmick, but augmenting it slightly and still talking about some of the kind of similar themes, but just kind of being a bit nastier about it. I really, really enjoyed that promo. So I'm quite excited to see kind of what he does with that.
Yeah, what do you suspect is coming next based on what he said tonight? What do you make? How would you describe to somebody who didn't see it what he's pivoted to and what to expect maybe next? Or is that the mystery?
I mean,
that's the intriguing part.
I mean, I think that is the intrigue, right? It could be a very, very similar character. Like, before he was talking mm-hmm. about his god and all of a sudden now he's basically almost, I mean, to almost kind of become his own god type of thing in his own head type of thing. I think it could be a really interesting, like, tweak on that gimmick. So I'm quite excited to see that.
Yeah. Anything else you want to share from your experience at the show, Chris? Anything else jump out
TV? Just one little thing, Wade. I know you've been having a debate as to whether that Elton John song is too old for Collision. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
There were, when that came on before the show, like there was a bunch of people on the group on the floor dancing. So yeah, I think
I'm
we're
in
good
that camp
that.
Too.
So,
yeah.
Oh, it was
too old
people
for
were,
it.
People were enjoying it, and it wasn't just, I mean, I'm nearly 40, and it wasn't just, like, the older guys. It was everyone.
I think Elton John's, you know, early work through, you know, and then there's stuff he's done, you know, since the 70s that I really like. But the 70s stuff and early 80s, it's so good. It's so timeless, and I think it's timeless. But, you know, in our Twitter poll was overwhelmingly, like, the people under 40 voted for it being cool at a higher rate in our Twitter poll than the people over 40. So I think it's a win. I think it's a good call. And I think right now it's David. It's the era of David Bowie. And I mean,
yeah.
I just think a lot of stuff from the 70s holds up well. And it's, yeah. I think people should watch I Love Lucy too. So, you know, I mean, I think that's a timeless classic that shouldn't get lost in the YouTube universe. So, I like to look for outside opinion to keep me in check, but it seems like people are on my side in endorsing this, and I'm glad Tony did.
Toronto is definitely on your side on that one. I'm not sure about I Love Lucy,
awesome.
But definitely on the Elton John thing.
Fair enough.
I absolutely agree with you, Wade. I mean, the classics are the classics. I mean, they last. I mean, I'm 27, and I saw Elton John twice on this farewell tour because I'm like, I got to see the legend. I got to see him. And he was unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yep. I mean, so I grew up on all the oldies music. I mean, so that's the classics music. I just love all that stuff, and I think it works really well. At first, I was kind of like, is the Elton John going to work for it? And now seeing it, the second episode go through, I'm like, absolutely it works. Absolutely. It's classic. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear, Chris, that the live crowd is into it, too, in Canada. That is validating. Yeah. cool. And Chris, anything else you want to bring up from your experience tonight?
No, that's everything I got in my notes, and I've got to run for a train now anyway, so awesome.
Awesome.
Thanks for having me on,
Chris. You bet. Thanks for calling in.
Cheers.
If you want to be an on-site correspondent for a future episode of Dynamite or Collision, or Raw and SmackDown for that matter, drop me a line at WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Put your name and put your city in the subject line. That just helps me stay organized when lining people up and confirming that we're looking for correspondence for that show. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. That's also where you can provide any feedback on this show, any opinions that we have, or just feedback on how we do the show and the balance of callers and emails and guests and the tone of it too. Believe it or not, we really invite your feedback and try to give you the show that you want most. So I just want to invite feedback, but also on-site correspondence and opinions on shows. All right, let's bring Javier Machado on, PW Torch contributor. We got to do the jingle here for Collision. It is not by Elton John, but it is still worth playing. Mike Myers is no Elton John, but he's not bad. That's cool. I like it. Javier, welcome. It stays in my head. It's catchy, and it's fitting. Welcome. What's on your mind about Collision tonight?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Joel. Joel's been a while.
It's been a while, Javier. Good to talk to you, my man.
Thanks. Same here. Thought it was a good show. Nice go home. It's funny when you guys talking, all the talk about Tanahashi. I every single time I watch a Tanahashi match, the first time he runs the ropes, I can like see the pain that he's going through because it's painful, painful to watch. But I'm used to, because right now what he mainly does is go through the basics, his standard signature moves. And, puts on a good match. So with MJF, I'm not expecting anything. I mean, it is a good opponent for him because it's just going to be, a mat-based wrestling thing. He's going to hit like 100 dragon screw leg whips, so it's going to be, you're not going to get that much crazy stuff with MJF. So, it's going to be a fine match. And the thing is that if Danielson and Okada and Omega and Ospreay did not sell the pay-per-view for you, MJF and Tanahashi's not. it's really a two-match pay-per-view. Everything else is just like, that's cute. That'll be an interesting matchup. That's going to be an interesting matchup. That's cute. That's pretty much my take on the pay-per-view.
Yeah, I think the whole show feels that way. I mean, it's not just a two-match show, but it could have been, and it would have been fine. Joel, let me get your take on the overall lineup. Like, do you think they've done a good job with this show this year? Not only putting the lineup together, but also to get beyond, what was it last year? 130,000-ish. I don't even have the number in front of me. To get beyond that, would it have been better to kind of do more to catch people up who aren't part of that New Japan, a fan base to understand more what's significant about especially the top two matches? Or is it better to just have this deep ensemble show with so many AEW wrestlers and just kind of let fans pick up on who they like and understand based on, again, the observing the rabid reaction, the fan reaction at the live events, you can kind of go, well, I don't know who these guys are, but I understand it, but I can tell it's going to be an awesome show, and I want to watch this all play out and learn.
Yeah, so last year's Forbidden Door show did about 125,000 with the buy rate for that show. And, you know, as, if we remember, the lead up to it was, you know, less than ideal. A lot of injuries, trying to rush a lot of things. A lot of matches were not announced for a while. People were disappointed by the matches that were announced on the show. You know, there was definitely not the trust that Tony Khan and Gato have now, where they're able to do a lot of these big marquee matchups that people were hoping for last year. And, I mean, my opinion was when they announced these two, I mean, huge generational dream matches between Danielson and Okada and Omega and Ospreay, I was of the mindset of, like, you could honestly sell the show on those two matches and just say that some other people are going to appear there and let the rest be almost a mystery, you know, as to you order the show, you know, you're going to get two incredible match of the year candidates. And then you're going to also see some other people featured on the show as well. But I thought that this year that they did, I mean, it's hard to compare to last year because it was so negative going into the show, where people were just, they were excited, they were interested to see it, but less excited than they had been when the idea of the show was announced. And I think that what they put on here, I mean, it's going to be a match or a show of the year contender. I just don't see how it's not, with everything that they've listed on here. But I think that what you were saying at the end there, Wade, is that, you know, and that was kind of the conversation we had about Tanahashi, is that I think the more that they are featuring these people from Japan there, the more they start to become special when they do appear on Dynamite, Collision, and then for any of the pay-per-views beyond just Forbidden Door, is that people are starting to see that these are real stars who are coming over. They put on good matches, and they're worth their time to see, and they're not going to see them every week. So when they do pop in there or it gets to the time where they're hyping up Forbidden Door, I think that some people are going to be interested to see something that is totally different than the regular AEW canon that you get on a weekly basis.
I'll be right back to you.
Yeah, and the other thing I like about the build is the fact that a lot of the New Japan talent is being added into existing AEW storylines. So it doesn't feel like you've completely paused what you're doing. You know, you have Ishii and Shota Umino, and, you know, tied in. Well, I mean, I wrote the primer already, and I broke my format because the thing is that so much of the story is like tied together, and it's pulling from stuff from New Japan, pulling from stuff from AEW, even pulling stuff from ROH, that I had to set the setting of everything that happened before you start unraveling it to how each match, you know, each piece of each match. Since, you know, they worked Ospreay into what's going on. They worked, you know, Danielson and Okada, you know, is somewhat based on that because, you know, it comes from the idea that Danielson, you know, is saying that, you know, everybody who's not BCC is an amateur, and then goes out and calls out Okada because, you know, it seems that that's what Danielson's doing. You know, he already, you know, embarrassed, you know, the BCC has been embarrassing the Elite, and, you know, so everything kind of makes sense. Everything's like a big, you know, ball of yarn that's just, you know, so it works all together. I think the only person it really hurts would be the, like, true casual. You know, I think the people who are, like, just interested in good matches, they're going to, you know, sign on just because you've got those two matches on the top. And the people who are interested in, like, the storyline and the, you know, the greater storyline, they're going to be interested too. I think the people who are, like, more like, oh, you know, I only watch AEW, like, you know, once every 2 weeks, every check-in right now and then just check out the matches, they're the only ones I don't think are going to necessarily, you know, the people who don't know New Japan are not really that tied in. I think those are the only ones you're not going to capture. But I think you're going to capture the people who really want to see, you know, what is a dream match. I even mentioned in the primer that I think the term dream match is too, you know, particularly in AEW, is too liberally tossed around. And now you actually have legitimately what is one. You know, so
agreed.
I do think that, yeah. So I mean, and I think that for the people who are like really in that, they're going to pay their money. And the people who have been following stuff, they're not, it's not something that they could say, oh, I can skip because you still have the BCC Elite feud going on. you still have the stuff that's going on between Jericho and Sting's group. So you still have all that stuff too, you know, for the people who are just following AEW.
Yeah, I don't know if there was a tiebreaker for Bryan Danielson staying in WWE because he got along with Vince. It was great money. It was, you know, he could have the schedule he wanted. They made him a good offer. If there was a tiebreaker, it might have been what's happening tomorrow night. He's like, I can't stay in WWE
for
if
sure.
It takes away my chance to have a match against Okada in a big environment in Toronto. You know, that what a great setting for it and Forbidden Door. It's just – so, yeah, I mean, and you know, I know there's, you know, talk of – Danielson having some ailments and you know, nagging injuries or, you know, concerns as far as being at his peak. But, I you know, he's a smart ring general, and so is Okada. And, you know, whatever limitations there are, they're going to put a pause on feeling pain for that night and go all out and try to make it special.
Yeah, I mentioned that in the primer that, you know, that's the only thing that tempers my expectation from, like, you know, an eight-star match or whatever number you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. Out there.
I mean,
it's the only thing that tempers expectations for that. I even bring up the fact that, you know, like, because Okada tends to not be checked in for, like, you know, unless they're big matches, but he has said in interviews that he's looking forward to facing Danielson. So I think we are going to get main event Okada for this. And, you know, Danielson, I know, So I know they're going to go out there and try to steal, you know, like, steal the year. Let's put it that way.
Well put, well put. What else, Javier?
I don't really know. It was a good show, but nothing really other than that. It was like, you know, it was fine. I do like the stuff, you know, that they're also spending time on giving it, showing us the people who I'm assuming are going to be the main stage for Collision. Scorpio Sky, I like that they gave him a slight tweak on his look, that he's tweaked his look a little bit, so he feels like a fresh wrestler. I think you mentioned, you know, what was, you know, on, yeah, I think it was on your, when you wrote up the report on the show. I think that you mentioned, you know, that you want to see what he was referring to in terms of, you know, that he let success get, you know, get to him. I think that might just be him explaining, you know, why he was the heel that he was, and that this might be like, you know, a new, more focused, less, you know, corny character. Because I found him corny when he was, you know, when he was the champ during there. So I'm hoping that's kind of like what he means. That's a revamp for who he's going to be portraying.
Yeah. Joel, what do you think? Where do you think it's headed? And what do you think about the reboot of Scorpio Sky? And then after that, I got an email on Brody King. I'll read to.
Yeah. So Scorpio Sky, he basically said, you know, he wanted to introduce himself over a promo package. He said he's back. He's going to show his true self this time. So, I mean, there's been a lot of starts and stops with Scorpio Sky. Obviously, he just kind of hit a certain level that people, you know, they saw him as this guy who was in SCU. He went out on his own. He did the stuff with Dan Lambert and Ethan Page. And, you know, it some of it worked. I think a lot of it just didn't work for him to get him to any sort of next level. So, you know, I'm curious to see what there is more for him. He's not a guy I would have picked off. You know, if I were to view the whole roster and say, who are the list of people that I would pluck to put on Collision and revamp them and try and introduce them into a new light, he would not have fallen into that category. But I'm curious to see what it is, because I think he is going to be more motivated, but he's going to need to find something really to define himself and give people a reason to believe that he is something different and he's somebody worth investing in.
Yeah, I agree. Azan also asked about Brody King. He said, do you see any value in Brody King outside of House of Black? To me, he always comes off as an upper mid-card guy or a world title challenger. Is Brody King, like, being shortchanged by not being able to be a solo act and just being in the mix with Buddy and Malakai? Or is he better in this, you know, kind of a supporting ensemble type role, not quite having the, I don't know if pressure is the right word, but the weight of having to carry something solo? Javier, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, my experience with Brody King has always kind of been part of a faction. He was part of that villain group with Marty Scurll, and he's always had like people around him. So I don't know if it's more of a preference, like he doesn't want to carry a solo load kind of thing, and he's always been like the heavy for a group. That might be a thing, but if that's not a thing, then yeah, I do think so. I think it's a short chance because if he's going to have a group around him, he could be the top, you know, the main guy in the group, you know, be there to support him. But in general, like, you know, in House of Black, he's just, you know, a heavy for Malakai Black, who's the lead of the group and the strongest of the group. So, I think that you could get more there, but I don't know, you know, at what point, I don't know what is, you know, where as far as he wants to take it. I do think you get more, though, because, you know, he's a big guy. He looks like he could put up a good fight. So, yeah, I think he could do a lot more. And, you know, he's like kind of like the big guy in New Japan that New Japan likes to, and, you know, to beat up other people. So I think he is a little bit shortchanged.
Joel, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, being in the House of Black, it gives him, you know, a staple to be a part of something that he, you know, so that he's not just kind of out on his own, that you see him sporadically. Because if I were to see Brody King on his own, I mean, I would kind of put him more in the category of someone like a Lance Archer, you know, who is someone that is credible. They come in, they always play that big guy role, but typically they lose, you know, unless it's against someone who's at a lower level than them. They kind of play that almost that gatekeeper role. But, you know, it's just Tony Khan's tendency of booking is that we just haven't seen, like, someone like that kind of break out on their own and rise up the ranks of the roster and, you know, be seen at a higher level. I mean, Tony just kind of has his guys that he features at the top and kind of rotates them in and out, you know, and everyone else is kind of at a certain level. And so, sure, I think that there is definitely possibility to do more with him outside the House of Black, but it just hasn't been something that we've seen with Tony's booking to this point.
One other question I don't want to forget to ask, and I want to get both your opinions on it, and Javi, I'll throw back to you too if you want to bring anything else up after that. Kevin Kelly and Nigel McGuinness, how do you think they're doing 2 weeks in here on their commentary, doing a live two-hour cable show that's not just match-based but promo, storyline, and hype-based? How do you think their chemistry is working, and how do you think they are as a fit for a primetime tour show AEW product compared to Excalibur, Shivani, Taz, and Ross? Joel, you first on this one.
Yeah, I think that both Kevin Kelly and Nigel McGuinness, I thought they were a lot more polished this week than they were last week, that they are understanding more of their cues of, you know, when to go in and out of break and explaining the characters. They also just bring that, you know, legitimacy of that sport aspect that I think a lot of people are looking for. So that's kind of what I was saying too about how Collision is different, and some people are like, oh man, it's totally different. But I think honestly the biggest thing for me is hearing Kevin Kelly, who just brings that legitimacy, you know, of bringing that sports aspect, treating things, you know, where he questions things that don't make sense, where Tony's really going to have to be on his toes with Kevin Kelly because he's going to call things out that don't make sense, you know, not in a Jim Ross way where Ross is kind of, you know, older guy, doesn't understand what's going on here. Kevin Kelly's going to really bring it from that aspect of, you know, of looking at what's real here, you know, what is, you know, what makes sense in these storylines, why is this person in this certain position, why you should be invested in these people. I think that eventually Kevin Kelly is going to be the A announcer for AEW. I like the energy that Excalibur brings, but to me, that is the biggest difference between Collision and Dynamite. Dynamite's got a lot of, you know, it's a lot of having fun with the guys, having fun with the boys, getting together on a Wednesday night with Shivani and Taz, and Excalibur is just out of breath explaining everything. It's like they had to slow down the graphics this week so that Kevin Kelly and Nigel McGuinness, they could actually explain the matches in sequential order and not just throw a bunch of stuff out of there and just see what sticks.
Yeah. Javier.
Yeah, I've been since I follow New Japan. I've been following Kelly. He is my favorite announcer, and yeah, it's not that I dislike him, but Nigel McGuinness would not be my top choice for color commentator. But him and Kelly really worked well today. Last week I kind of skipped through the fast forward through the matches because I'd forgotten to watch the show. so I didn't really get the commentary. But, yeah, I thought it was great. I'd probably call it just slightly a tinge bit more, you know, moves, because he did do a few of those, oh, what a move, you know, kind of thing. But it just, like, this is a minor nitpick, so I'm not, like, you know, burying him or anything. But I do like the fact that he lets, you know, he quiets down and lets the match just, you know, play out. You know, he's like I said, he's one of my favorite announcers right now. So, and I think he did a really good job. Plus, he also marries calling the match in terms of the moves with calling the emotional aspect and what, you know, what is the emotional, like, hook to what you're watching at this moment.
Javier, anything else you want to bring up?
The main event, one of the things I really thought was a smart idea, if this is why they did this, was to have CM Punk take the beating for a long period of time, because I think that for the people who were booing him, you know, who are anti-Punk, they get a little bit of, what's the word I'm looking for,
he's looking for Tommy Dreamer lashings, you know, something like that, where the guy's just getting beat up to earn the, to earn back the respect, something like that, where, you know, just have him get beat down. I think maybe that will help with some of the crowd reaction.
Vicarious. Mm-hmm. They're vicariously enjoying the beating of CM Punk, while the fans who, you know, are pro CM Punk are just, you know, are rooting for him to get the hot tag. So I think it worked for, you know, both sides to see him get beat up. There was a during the match, during one of the breaks, because you mentioned this earlier in the call, Wade, there was a – during one of the breaks, there was a very loud let's go Switchblade CM Punk back and forth. And Kevin Kelly, like, held out for a minute, and then he actually brought up the same thing you did, that he said it reminded him of the, you know, the trips to Canada with Bret Hart, and, you know, and he marveled at, like, the crowd, and he was getting goosebumps because it was taking him back in time. So that's something that he mentioned mm-hmm. in the commentary during one of the breaks.
Kevin Kelly did, Javier and Joel, is when Christian was claiming to be the champion, which I loved that he just did that with a straight face,
that.
And Luchasaurus just standing behind him, and you can't see his facial expression, so it's kind of left to your imagination how he's feeling, although he did raise him on his shoulders afterwards. I don't know if that's a feature or a flaw that we can't see how Luchasaurus is reacting, because, you know, he's not Glenn Jacobs when it comes to expressing body language through – or his emotions through body language, because – Glenn Jacobs, even though he's, you know, gone off the deep end politically lately, he had the mask on. He was just amazing with conveying emotions with just a tilt of the head and stuff. Okay, what I liked is Kevin Kelly going, what? Not champion, and being kind of disgusted by it. Like, mm-hmm. you want announcers not undercutting heels trying to get heat. The whole point of heels cheating, the whole point of heels ganging up on people, the whole point of heels saying something that isn't true to self-aggrandize themselves is to get heat. You don't, as a play-by-play announcer, take out the fire extinguisher and spray all the heat, spray it all down and extinguish the heat. And he's out there going, what? He's reacting naturally as you would if this were real. And you got to have everybody in sync on that, or what's the point? Then book differently. Then book a completely different style. But if you're going to have heels trying to get heel heat, you want people like Kevin Kelly reacting the way that he did naturally, not laughing at it, not brushing it off and being outraged by it, and not turning it into a bit either, which I think sometimes, you know, other announcers do, including Michael Cole, has sometimes turned reactions to some things into more of a bit than genuine. I think Cole does a really good job in most ways as far as that goes. So that's just one example of something that jumped out. And I thought they covered nicely and they had to do this with Jeff Hardy also a couple weeks back, the announcers did, but covering for Tanahashi slipping and going, oh, that's because of the knee being, you know, worked over. I wish they would have adjusted a little better at the end and not just gone back to the same spot 10 seconds later and Swerve had to just sell a punch as if he got hit by, you know, MJF's Dynamite Diamond Ring. They could have probably improvised a little better, but I like that they jumped in. I think it was probably Nigel who said it, but that it's due to the Swerve working over his knee. So some little things that they're doing that I think are promising and back up, I think, some of the general assessments that you both had on him. Javier, back to you.
Yeah, a funny thing about the Tanahashi match, He apparently did not realize that as soon as he got in the ring, they were to ring the bell, because he does a thing where he takes off his jacket slowly and, like, you know, poses for the crowd. And he started doing that when the bell rang, and he's like, oh, crap. And he had to struggle to get the jacket off because he wasn't expecting for the match to start. I mean, it left Swerve in a bad spot because Swerve is like, I should be, I'm a heel. I should be attacking him, but, you know, it kind of felt like it was a little bit awkward there to start things off with. I think that's pretty much all I had, unless you have something else, Wade?
No, Joel, do you have anything else you want to bring up?
Just looking through the notes. Not really, no.
Trying to think if there's anything else at all that I want to bring up, because I really think we have hit on everything. Yeah, I don't really have anything else to bring up either. So we can probably wrap up here. Javier, great having you on. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, just let me plug the primer.
Plug
your send it out to
preview,
you. So,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, check it out. My first prediction already came true because I did not know that the hidden partner was going to be announced in. I thought the hidden partner was going to be announced in the pay per view for Team Sting. So I did not know it was going to be announcing in, and I guess Naito. I thought Naito was the first one because they did say that it was someone who has history with Jericho, and Jericho won the Intercontinental title off of Naito. Naito won it back at Wrestle Kingdom, so that is why Naito is the person wrestling there. Oh, and I, speaking of Naito, that did remind me of one thing. Really cool to have both Naito and Andrade on the same show, even though we couldn't see them together on TV. The two of them are, with Rush, were the original Ingobernables of Japón. Oh, sorry, the original Ingobernables that Naito spun off into Ingobernables of Japón. And it was really cool for them to actually both be, on the same show, even though they couldn't cross paths because there's, backstage politics between different companies, so.
Right.
Cool. Well, Javier, thank you. Check that out. Check out Javier's primer, his pay-per-view preview at pwtorch.com. That should be up anytime now. And Joel, welcome back to hopefully the rotation here as we continue to do audio shows. It brings back good memories of having your analysis here, and it was a good week to have you on.
Yeah, absolutely, Wade. I'm very much looking forward to we'll have more conversations offline, but I definitely want to contribute more in audio and, in any which way I can, because I just love talking about wrestling with all you guys. So it's fun to be back.
Excellent. Well, thanks to our on-site correspondents. Thanks to our team of callers. And we will talk to y'all next time. And that next time can be Wrestling Night in America following Forbidden Door tomorrow night with Greg Parks. And also, if you're a VIP member, you'll hear Todd Martin, Rich Fan, and me analyzing the show for an hour plus in all likelihood tomorrow night after the show concludes. It's already been a fun weekend and more to come. Thanks, everybody.